Good morning. We have a few announcements this morning. The 5th and 6th grade transitions class is sponsoring a peanut butter drive for the Hunger Task Force as their service project this year. Please bring jars of peanut butter to the service on March 13th. You haven't turned your electronic devices off yet? Grab it. Check the calendar. March 13th. Peanut butter. And we have an announcement from Doug Esty.
Two musical-related announcements. First, next Saturday, the 27th, is the All Church Retreat, and we're offering a music workshop. Bring instruments if you wish. Otherwise, rhythm instruments will be provided, and we'll learn some songs, but mainly we'll learn a song for the next Sunday, and we'll present that song for the entire congregation at the church service the next day. Also, two of our young people will be participating in the the Musicians Network chorus over the summer in Madison, and to kind of help raise some funds for them and raise awareness of that. We're presenting a coffee house on April 9th at 6:30. It'll be open mic, so please come sign up. There's on our new music department bulletin board that's right across from, or just outside the door to the kitchen, across the hall from the high school room. Sign up for a slot to perform. We would love to see everybody who wants to perform get a chance to. And also you can bring treats, and we'll have coffee and snacks for your enjoyment. So please join us.
Another announcement. We will be having a workshop on interrupting hurtful remarks, a workshop for teens and adults, also March 13th. And on a daily basis, we hear slurs, jokes, and other seemingly harmless comments that we often don't know how to deal with. Understanding oppression and how to handle it is critical for change to be possible. The aim of this workshop is to help participants gain the confidence to address hurtful comments rooted in racism, sexism, homophobia, etc., with thoughtful and effective responses. Through small group activities, participants will practice interrupting and diffusing insensitive situations. That's for teens and adults on March 13th at 12:30 to 2 p.m.
Thank you. Morning. Upward mobility, the American dream, and the dream of people throughout the world has become unattainable for most. Although many of us in Lake Country are comfortable, concentration of wealth and power has skyrocketed. Half of all Americans are impoverished or struggling as the middle class shrinks and billionaires take huge profits. Where is our commitment to the common good? Our Unitarian Universalist tradition places its faith in people to create a more loving community for all, guided by justice, equity, and compassion in human relations. Challenging extreme inequality becomes a moral imperative. Today, we will reflect on some aspects of the state of escalating economic inequality in our world and consider what we can do about it. Please join us in listening and learning. Please join us in action. Please join us this morning in worship. Please take a moment now to say hello or to introduce yourself to the people around you. We are going to do a sung chalice lighting this morning, so please join us in singing our chalice lighting song. The words are in your order of service.
Welcome to Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church. At LCUUC, we work to surround our community with the spirit of love in everything we do. My name is Robert Ehler, and I'm one of the members of the LCUUC Social Justice Committee that is presenting this morning's service. No matter who you are or where you have come from, you are welcome here. We welcome those who have little and those who have much. We welcome those who live in mansions as well as those who are homeless. We welcome those who have trust funds and those who haven't a penny in their bank account. We welcome those whose skins are black, white, brown, or other. We welcome those who have known nothing but acceptance in their lives and those who have known the pain of exclusion and suffered disdain for their differences. LCUUC is a UUA-recognized welcoming congregation, which means we welcome and affirm queer and trans people and all people, regardless of who they love or what pronouns they use. Please join us for refreshment and conversation in our social hall after the service. And while you're there, stop by the welcome table to find out more about LCUUC. Today's order of service includes announcements of upcoming church activities, and we look forward to everyone joining in. Like and follow LCUUC on Facebook in order to get ongoing information about activities, and check out our webpage at lcuuc.org to stay current on services and events. Please take a moment at this point in the service to silence all electronics you may have with you today. We are so pleased that you are here to celebrate and worship with us. Please rise in body or spirit and join in singing our first hymn, number 121.
Next, we'll have our story for all ages, presented by two of our high schoolers, Ethan Suhr and Evan Sandin.
One of the ways we care for the wider community is by contributing to local food pantries, both financially and through the collection of non-perishable food items, which we donate each month. If you have food items to share, I don't see the basket. If you could please bring them forward at any point during the service or ask a child to bring them forward for you. And I invite the children to come up for a story. Today's story is Those Shoes by Maribeth Bolt. I have dreams about those shoes. Black high tops, two white stripes. Grandma, I want them. There's no room for one around here. Just need, Grandma says. And what you need are new boots for winter. Brandon T. comes to school in those new shoes. He says he's the fastest runner now, not me. I was always the fastest before those shoes came along. Then Nate comes to school in those shoes. Next, Alan, Jacoby, and Terrence each get a pair. Then, one day, in middle kickball, one of my shoes comes apart. Looks like you could use a new pair, Jeremy, Mr. Elfrey, the guidance counselor, says. He brings out a box of shoes and other stuff he has for kids who need things. He helps me find the only shoes that are my size. Velcro. Like the ones my little cousin Marshall wears. They have an animal on them from a cartoon I don't think any kid has ever watched. When I come back to the classroom, Alan Jacoby takes one look at my Mr. Elfrey shoes and laughs. And so does Terrence, Brandon T., and everyone else. The only kid not laughing is Antonio Parker. At home, Grandma says, how kind of Mr. Elfrey. I nod and turn my back. I'm not going to cry about any dumb shoes. On Saturday, Grandma says, let's check out those shoes you've been wanting so much. I got a little bit of money set aside. Might be enough, you know. At the shoe store, Grandma turns those shoes over so she can check the price. When she sees it, she sits down heavy. Maybe they wrote it down wrong, I say. Grandma shakes her head. Then I remember the thrift stores. What if some rich kid outgrew his or got two pairs for Christmas and had to give one of them away? We ride the bus to the first thrift shop. Black cowboy boots, pink slippers, sandals, high heels, every kind of shoes except the ones I want. We try the second, nothing. The third, I see something in the window. Black shoes with two white stripes, high tops, perfect shape, $2.50. Those shoes! My heart is pounding hard and I take off my shoes and hitch up my baggy socks. How exciting, Grandma says. What size are they? I shove my foot into the first shoe, curling my toes to get my heel in. I don't know, but I think they fit. Grandma kneels on the floor and feels for my toes at the end of the shoe. Oh, Jeremy, she says, I can't spend good money on shoes that don't fit. I pull the other shoe on and try to walk around. They're okay, I say, holding my breath, praying that my toes will fall off right then and there. But my toes don't fall off. I buy them anyway with my own money, and I squeeze them on and limp to the bus stop. At home, Grandma puts a new pair of snow boots in my closet and doesn't say a word about my two big feet shuffling around in my two small shoes. Sometimes shoes stretch, I say. Grandma gives me a hug. I check every day, but those shoes don't stretch. I have to wear Mr. Elfrey's to school instead. One day during math, I glance at Antonio's shoes. One of them is taped up, and his feet look smaller than mine. After school, I head to the park to think. Antonio is there, the only kid who doesn't laugh at my Mr. Elfrey shoes. Grandma calls me for supper and invites Antonio over, too. After supper, he spies my shoes. How come you don't wear them? Antonio asks. I shrug. My hands are sweaty. I can feel him wishing those shoes were his. That night, I'm awake for a very long time thinking about Antonio. When morning comes, I try on my shoes one last time. Before I can change my mind, the shoes are in my coat. Snow is beginning to fall as I run across the street to Antonio's apartment. I put the shoes in front of his door push the doorbell, and run. At school, Antonio is smiling big on his brand new at his brand new shoes. I feel happy when I see the look on his face, and a little mad when I look at Mr. Alfrey's shoes. But later, when it's time for recess, something happens. Everywhere there's snow. Leave your shoes in the hall and change into your boots, the teacher announces. Leave your shoes in the hall. It's then what I remember what I have in my backpack. New boots. New black boots that no kid has ever worn before. Standing in line to go to recess, Antonio leans forward and says, "Thanks." I smile and give him a nudge. Let's race.
Thanks. Thanks for doing the story. So may we have our lantern bearer come on up? May the light and love of our chalice guide you today and every day, children. And please join in singing the children out. The words are in your order of service.
Today's designated collection is for the Lake Area Pre-Clinic. All cash and loose change will go to the clinic. If you'd like to donate all or a portion of your donation to the Lake Area Pre-Clinic, please make out your check to LCUUC with Lake Area Pre-Clinic in the memo line and the amount to go to the clinic. It's hard to follow Amy and to try and give a joke. As a matter of fact, my wife said this morning, "Just stand up there, bud. You're a joke." So here am I. Is that enough? Well, I'll try just a little bit more. I looked up about 300 different jokes, read them all, and I thought, I'll read them all to you. But then I decided not to, and narrowed them down to two, and then I took a vote from our Social Justice Committee and said, "Okay, which of these do you like? Make sure you vote. Because if you tie, I read both of them." They tied. So I thought, how can I read both of them? An idea came to me. I'll read the first half of one and the second half of the other. And then I thought, no, maybe not. So I thought, well, which one should I use? Should I use the one that plays off of the LCUUC? The Lukuk one, the Lukuk, which came from Abby Lewis, who as a young kid said when she was reading LCUUC, "Lukuk, mommy, what does that mean?" Well, now it's part of our history, isn't it? Check your email. Lukuks, okay, spinoffs. And I thought, how cool. LCUUC, play off of each letter being either a sound or a word. Let's see you use cash. Hey, I could use that during the donation request period. Oh, which happens to be now. Or let's see you use checks. Or let's see you use credit. But I thought, no, they're not going to like that. I'm not going to share that at all. I'd much rather share the other one, okay? which deals with a young 10-year-old girl who was collecting donations for her school project, decided to visit her favorite store, the candy store. How many of you was the candy store, or was it your favorite store? Hands up, please. All liars, keep your hands down. The candy store, whose owner, Mr. Doolittle, was always very friendly. "Hello, Emma," said Mr. Doolittle. "How are you today?" "Great," she replied. "And I'm wondering if you'd be interested in making a donation to my school project to provide food for the hungry." "Oh, yes, I'd be delighted to. And with a twinkle in his eye, he reached into the cash register and took out a quarter in one hand and a $5 bill in the other hand. "Here, Emma, take what you wish." "Oh, Mr. Doolittle, that's very generous of you," as she took the quarter from his hand. "This quarter will be wonderful. Thank you very much." She turned to leave and then turned around. "But Mr. Doolittle, I might lose this coin. Would it be okay if I wrapped it up in that green paper in your other hand?" Our offering today of coins, green paper, coins wrapped in green paper, cash, credit, or whatever else, will now be given and received. Thank you. Our thanks for these gifts, both given and received, for the work of this community. This is the time in our service where we share our joys and concern. We do this in two ways, by speaking them aloud and by lighting candles. Would anyone who has a joy or a concern to share, please raise your hand and the ushers will bring you a microphone.
Hi, this is Mike. I have a proud parental moment. Our daughter, Nicole's team, won the Wisconsin State High School Curling Championship yesterday.
And being that this is a social justice service, a candle of concern for all those suffering from social injustice, whether it's economic, racial, or immigrant, or whatever.
This is Carrie. I would just like a candle of joy for, I recently got involved with the Social Justice Committee, and it's exciting to be on this committee where it's a great group of people and it's a real joy to work together.
This is Patty, and please light a candle of joy. My son and daughter-in-law and two grandchildren who've been living in Ecuador for a year and a half, will be home on Thursday.
This is Scott. I've got a joy and a concern. My joy is I did my first ever roof repair yesterday. And I didn't fall off the roof, and I did a pretty good job at what I did. My concern is if this kind of unexpected thing keeps coming up, our Christmas tree will never come down.
This is Amy, and while we're on the theme of social justice, I wanted to thank everyone at LCUUC who donated snowsuits and snow pants and to light a candle of joy for all the children in Detroit that got the 4 boxes of coats and snow pants, gloves, and mittens that we sent. Thank you all so much. So a candle of joy for that work.
This is Diane. I don't know if all the new members are aware that we contribute to the Hope Center in Waukesha, covers the entire Waukesha County. And I know the beginning announcements, a lot of people don't hear because they come in a little late. But anyway, if you have any very warm clothes, sleeping bags for the men who have to sleep in the doorways of grocery stores, gloves, insulated socks, boots, you get the idea. Thank you so much.
Hi, this is Matt. A candle of joy and thanks for the social services that help our poor. Myself and my family are on Badger Care and food stamps, and if it weren't for those programs, we would be in a lot of trouble.
And we light the last candle for those joys and sorrows which we hold deeply, but which have not been named here today. Please join together in a few moments of silent thought, meditation, or the spirit of prayer.
Hello. Today's reading is from the sermon Why No Living Wage by Ginger Luke, RE Director at River Road Unitarian. So why are UUs interested in social change? We come here seeking community. We come here seeking a wholeness, which we can't find sitting at home or even walking in the woods. We come for the strength, affirmation, and security which community gives us. That strength turns inward to support and nurture us. And it stretches us outward to care for the immediate needs of the world's people and to be able to change the world. Here ends the first reading. Please rise in body and spirit and join in singing hymn number 170, We Are a Gentle, Angry People. So a few weeks ago, our minister, Reverend Amy, gave a sermon on social justice. She said that it doesn't take special people to get involved. It just takes people being there, jumping in, and getting their feet wet. So here we are, just jumping in and getting soaked, and inviting you to join us. The Social Justice Committee is focusing on just one important issue this year. The idea was to find an issue our community is passionate about, engage as many members as possible, and working together, forge an even stronger community. There's an immense amount of interests, skills, and talents in this community that we're hoping to tap into. We also want to reach out to other UU churches in our area, as well as organizations such as Common Ground, UUs for Social Justice, the Black Lives Matter movement, and others. We will also continue to do the great work associated with our current activities such as Family Promise and the Hope Center. Last fall, we surveyed our members, asking each to rank the seven UUA social action issues. We had 70 responses. Economic inequality was chosen as the first priority. I chose it because I believe economic equality will more easily lead to solving other issues such as racial and immigrant justice. And Kim, what about you?
Well, Phil, one of the reasons that economic justice matters to me is because of something that happened to my brother. He spent many years as a cook in a restaurant without benefits or paid sick leave. He landed in the hospital not once, but twice. The first time because of an undiagnosed medical condition. The second because he didn't have enough money to pay for the blood tests and medication to manage his condition. He racked up bills that he'll be paying back for at least a decade to come. And I'm sure many of you know someone who's in a similar situation. When I think of economic disparity in our country and our world, I can't help but feel grateful for all I have. A theist might say, "There, but for the grace of God, go I." A secular realist might say, "There, but for the luck of birth, go I. There, but for good schools and my two-parent middle-class household, go I." Some might say, "There, but for the ethic of hard work, go I." And in some cases, that would be true. But I don't work any harder than my brother. I certainly don't have to be on my feet for 8 to 10 hours at a stretch. I don't have to work with sharp equipment or over steam tables or with caustic cleaning products. Fortunately, so far, there's a happy ending for him. He found a new job with benefits and sick leave. However, the person who took his place back at the restaurant is exactly where he was a few short years ago, working for minimum wage and one medical event from crushing debt, trying to support himself and maybe a family on less than $20,000 a year. This is why economic justice matters to me.
And now we'd like to show you another reason why economic justice matters.
I fought for my country. I served in the United States Marine Corps, 2 tours in Iraq. I'm a proud countryman. But I'm also a man who came home after serving in Fallujah and Al-Ramadi, and I can't even put food on the table for my family, gentlemen. I can't even afford to put a roof over my child's head with the amount of money that I'm making. I worked 45 hours this week, and my manager pulled me over to the side and told me that you can't have these 5 hours of overtime at time and a half. She told me she was going to take my 5 hours and put them on next week's check so she wouldn't have to give me my time and a half.
That's illegal.
And disperse it out. But it happens. It happened. I served my great country, and I came home, and this is my passion. I love to cook for KFC. I like to feed the people. I like to see the smiles on their faces when they come in that store. I got a Purple Heart. I got wounded in combat. Guess where I was? I was back on the battlefield the next day. I don't want my son to look at me like I'm something less because I have to work for $7.25 when I bust my butt every day and I take pride in what I do, gentlemen. we have a voice and we want it to be heard, we want 15. We need 15. We deserve 15. I'm not.
You know, every time I see this video, it just irritates the heck out of me. $7.25 per hour. That's $15,000 per year. That's barely enough to live on, let alone try to raise two kids. Why does this have to be? We are a wealthy country. If you work hard, you really shouldn't have to live in poverty. We've all heard various statistics about economic inequality. 62 people in this world of ours own more than 3.5 billion, half the world's population. 62 people. The top 1% of people in the U.S. make more than 24% of the national income. The average U.S. CEO makes 380 times the average worker, their average worker. It hasn't always been this way. It's gotten worse, much worse in the last 30 years. We are approaching the income inequality last seen in the Great Depression of the 1930s. So sit back while we show you some more of the details on economic inequality in the U.S.
There's a chart I saw recently that I can't get out of my head. A Harvard business professor and economist asked more than 5,000 Americans how they thought wealth was distributed in the United States. This is what they said they thought it was. Dividing the country into five rough groups of the top, bottom, and middle three 20% groups, they asked people how they thought the wealth in this country was divided. Then he asked them what they thought was the ideal distribution, and 92%, that's at least 9 out of 10 of them, said it should be more like this. In other words, more equitable than they think it is. Now that fact is telling, admittedly, the notion that most Americans know that the system is already skewed unfairly. But what's most interesting to me is the reality compared to our perception. The ideal is as far removed from our perception of reality as the actual distribution is from what we think exists in this country. So ignore the ideal for a moment. Here's what we think it is again. And here is the actual distribution. Shockingly skewed. Not only do the bottom 20% and the next 20%, the bottom 40% of Americans barely have any of the wealth. I mean, it's hard to even see them on the chart. But the top 1% has more of the country's wealth than 9 out of 10 Americans believe the entire top 20% should have. Mind-blowing. But let's look at it another way, because I find this chart kind of difficult to wrap my head around. Instead, let's reduce the 311 million Americans to just a representative 100 people. Make it simple. Here they are. Teachers, coaches, firefighters, construction workers, engineers, doctors, lawyers, some investment bankers, a CEO, maybe a celebrity or two. Now let's line them up according to their wealth. Poorest people on the left, wealthiest on the right, just a steady row of folks based on their net worth. We'll color code them like we did before based on which 20% quintile they fall into. Now let's reduce the total wealth of the United States, which was roughly $54 trillion in 2009, to this symbolic pile of cash. And let's distribute it among our 100 Americans. Well, here's socialism, all the wealth of the country distributed equally. We all know that won't work. We need to encourage people to work and work hard to achieve that good old American dream and keep our country moving forward. So, here's that ideal we asked everyone about. Something like this curve. This isn't too bad. We've got some incentive, as the wealthiest folks are now about 10 to 20 times better off than the poorest Americans. But hey, even the poor folks aren't actually poor, since the poverty line has stayed almost entirely off the chart. We have a super healthy middle class with a smooth transition into wealth. And yes, Republicans and Democrats alike chose this curve. 9 out of 10 people, 92%, said this was a nice, ideal distribution of America's wealth. But let's move on. This is what people think America's wealth distribution actually looks like. Not as equitable, clearly, But for me, even this still looks pretty great. Yes, the poorest 20 to 30% are starting to suffer quite a lot compared to the ideal, and the middle class is certainly struggling more than they were, while the rich and wealthy are making roughly 100 times that of the poorest Americans, and about 10 times that of the still healthy middle class. Sadly, this isn't even close to the reality. Here is the actual distribution of wealth in America. The poorest Americans don't even register. They're down to pocket change. And the middle class is barely distinguishable from the poor. In fact, even the rich between the top 10 and 20 percentile are worse off. Only the top 10% are better off. And how much better off? So much better off that the top 2 to 5% are actually off the chart at this scale. And the top 1%, this guy, well, his stack of money stretches 10 times higher than we can show. Here's his stack of cash, restacked, all by itself. This is the top 1% we've been hearing so much about. So much green in his pockets that I have to give him a whole new column of his own, because he won't fit on my chart. 1% of America has 40% of all the nation's wealth. The bottom 80%, 8 out of every 10 people, or 80 out of these 100, only has 7% between them. And this has only gotten worse in the last 20 to 30 years. While the richest 1% take home almost a quarter of the national income today, in 1976, they took home only 9%. Meaning their share of income has nearly tripled in the last 30 years. The top 1% own half the country's stocks, bonds, and mutual funds. The bottom 50% of Americans own only 0.5% of these investments, which means they aren't investing. They're just scraping by. I'm sure many of these wealthy people have worked very hard for their money. But do you really believe that the CEO is working 380 times harder than his average employee? Not his lowest paid employee, not the janitor, but the average earner in his company. The average worker needs to work more than a month to earn what the CEO makes in 1 hour. We certainly don't have to go all the way to socialism to find something that is fair for hardworking Americans. We don't even have to achieve what most of us consider might be ideal. All we need to do is wake up and realize that the reality in this country is not at all what we think it is.
So, yeah, kind of unbelievable. Words do seem kind of inadequate to describe it. Unjust, perhaps, maybe outrageous. The causes of economic inequality are certainly complex. And it is important to note that reformers are not attacking capitalism, nor the free market system. We need a market system that's fair, where real competition works to everyone's benefit. The problem is that unregulated markets most often evolve into monopolies and other mechanisms that minimize real competition. Most everyone, even some of the most conservative capitalists, agree that market regulation is needed. The devil's is in the details of those regulations. What happens over time is that the wealthier capitalists get more representation, more access, and more influence on how those regulations are written. Regulations on taxes, patents, banking, etc., and over time, an unfair competitive advantage that reinforces and accelerates the inequity. We see the results of this inequity all around us. We have a large class of people working full-time but living in poverty. Large corporations and super wealthy can hire the lawyers and lobbyists to finance candidates, gain access, and help rewrite laws and regulations to their benefit. Personally, I don't believe in dark conspiracies, but rather capitalism naturally evolves to greater inequality if it's left unchecked and insufficiently regulated. The net result is the same, though, a large class of poor that have minimal voice in our society.
In his TED talk, "Beware, Fellow Plutocrats, the Pitchforks Are Coming," gazillionaire Nick Hanauer warns of the economic underclass getting fed up and rising up, a la the French Revolution. But we aren't gazillionaires. We don't have to be worried about being run out of our castles by marauding minimum wage workers wielding pitchforks and torches. Still, our children and grandchildren will come of age in a climate where they can expect not to enjoy a standard of living that equals that of their parents, the first generation in American history for whom this is true. Even those with the luck of birth, good schools, two-parent middle-class households, and an ethic of hard work will be saddled with more education-related debt, smaller paychecks in real dollars, and less security in their golden years. But beyond our individual self-interest, achieving economic justice matters because fairness, equity, and compassion matter. Because our basic humanity calls upon us to rise above the eat or be eaten law of the jungle. If our own prosperity is achieved on the backs of our brothers and sisters, it is a tainted prosperity that leaves us a little less fair, us a little less compassionate. It leaves us a little less human. But it's not just those of us at the front of the church this morning who feel this way. Economic justice is an issue that matters to all of us at LCUC. We can see this in our good work with housing the homeless, parents, and children through Family Promise, where we have hosted 20 families, 25 adults, and 29 children since we began. And of course, there are many contributions of food, clothing, money, furniture, and endless volunteer hours at the Hope Center over the years. Recently, we put out an email with the question of why economic justice matters to you, and we received some great responses, some very long and thoughtful and well-supported responses that we had to modify a bit for today's purposes. But I've asked 10 volunteers with blue sheets of paper if they would kindly stand and be your voice of the answers that we got to the question. Here's your cue. LCUUC, why should we work for economic justice?
Everyone deserves respect and to be treated fairly.
On a moral level, people working 40 hours a week should not need assistance from others for basic needs. It is morally the right thing to do based on our Union 7 principles.
We must have government-funded safety nets for those who require assistance to meet their basic needs, either temporarily or permanently.
This is our land of liberty and justice for all. That means, at minimum, health care for every person on American soil.
We are lucky enough to live in a relatively wealthy region, have good education and good jobs and good health. It is right to use that privilege to share and help others.
Helping others is one of the answers to what is the meaning of life.
People struggling to survive financially are stressed and disenfranchised. Economic justice results in a more representative society.
We are all connected, literally and spiritually. If some are hurting, we all hurt.
A strong democracy thrives best when all its people are doing well and working together.
Thank you. Excessive economic inequality doesn't have to be. Other countries have solved the problem and have strong capitalistic free market systems. Sweden, Denmark, Norway are significantly more equitable. Germany, France, and England all rank higher in income and wealth equality than the U.S. Within the U.S., 26 states have raised the minimum wage above the federal rate. Wisconsin is not one of them. San Francisco, Seattle, New York City have all increased the minimum wage to $15 per hour. There is movement on this issue.
I'm a big believer in envisioning what we want to see before we set off to get it. So I invite you to close your eyes and envision a different kind of country, a different kind of world, where our abundant resources are shared more equally. Not let's hold hands and sing kumbaya equally, which would be nice, but where the least of our brothers and sisters can put a roof over their heads, feed their kids, send them to solid schools and have their basic medical needs met, and not have to worry about indigence in their old age. Where the middle class is growing and there is real opportunity for upward mobility for those who work hard and innovate. Where those who already have more than enough influence public policy in a way that benefits society as a whole, not just to pad their already padded pockets. We're not aiming for utopia, but we can aim for better, much, much better.
So what can we do? The Social Justice Committee has begun to assemble a list of action priorities, but we want more input, more ideas from you. Here's some of the ideas we have developed.
Educate ourselves. We will be presenting a 5-week adult education series starting in March. It will be based on existing UU economic justice curricula and include classes on economic inequality and what we can do about it.
Create a social justice webpage for our website where we can list our actions and successes. This will allow us to spread the word and coordinate more with other organizations.
Research ethical investing options. This movement is growing rapidly, with over $3 trillion now being invested in ethical mutual funds.
Take part in the program Living Below the Line, a real-life exercise where participants experience what it's like to eat on a poverty budget.
Support the Fight for 15, raising the minimum wage movement. Attending rallies, signing the UUA petition for raising the minimum wage. This petition will be in the social hall after service.
Assist in upgrading existing economic justice smartphone apps and spreading a word on how to use them. They allow the user to quickly identify products and businesses that either rank especially high or especially low on economic justice issues.
Lobby our legislators on tax policy and minimum wage and the move to amend. Conduct joint letter writing days.
Attend the UUA General Assembly, where we can network and coordinate with other UUs on social action issues.
So, there's lots of ideas, and we welcome more. We invite you to join us on our committee, at the adult education classes, and as we begin to take concrete action. We have a well-appointed table in the back of the social hall with information and petitions that we invite you to sign. It seems like we have time for a polylog.
Yeah.
So we'll take some time here to give you the opportunity to share your reflection or your opinion about what you've heard today. Please, when you are interested in sharing your thoughts, raise your hand and an usher will bring you the mic. Let us know your name and your brief comment.
This is Jerry, and thanks to Phil and Kim and everybody involved in this committee for putting together this program. It was a great outreach. I just want to remind everybody here and everybody that didn't turn out today that the Social Action Committee is not closed. It's open to anybody who's interested in participating.
The other day I was listening to a program on NPR talking about the replacing a Supreme Court justice, and one of the stories they told was about Judge Roberts, who was actually helping to take care of his daughter's children because she is a newly single mother. So he was leaving the court at like 3 p.m. every afternoon to go pick up the grandkids. And they determined that he was a swing vote on the Affordable Health Care Act judgment, the decision, and they figured out that was because he was doing that was influenced his vote on that act. So getting the elite to actually be out and doing what the common folk do would help with decisions.
Wow. Yeah.
I think a lot of this has to do with more than raising a minimum wage. I think salary caps and corporate budgets, corporate responsibility, have a lot to do with, you know, where we can make changes that are impactful. I happen to work for an advertising agency, and I watch thousands of dollars slip away in travel budgets, and, you know, I'm ashamed to admit I've been at the table where, you know, groups of CEOs are together and they're purchasing $100 bottles of wine, and you know, the dinner tab ends up being, you know, more than $100 a person, and it's shocking. And I'm one person with one agency, with one corporation. And when I think about the total that goes into corporate indulgences, I struggle not to just shut down completely. So much of the conversation really should be more around that top end income and how unethical that is. You know, my fear is that as we raise minimum wage, you know, while some people are still making decisions for our country, then the prices of food will go up and the prices of products will go up. It won't be that, in, you know, equality and in income is achieved as long as, you know, powers that be are making some of our decisions. That's what really scares me.
Yeah, I have to agree with you on that. And I've often thought about the idea of putting some kind of maximum on wages. One other way you can get at that, though, is with tax policy. And many of you recall that back in, I think it was the 60s, the upper income tax rate was like 90%. So it's a way to go and basically bring that wealth, that money back into circulation and distribute it back to the people that aren't paid as much.
And before Betsy talks, I'd like to just add to what I heard in your comment was you feel paralyzed, or we can tend to feel paralyzed. And the minutiae, it's not minutiae, but the details of how we choose to help solve this problem, we can work that out. But I think the big issue or what we need to tend to is not allowing ourselves to be paralyzed. Because I tell you, if we don't have any power where we live and who we are, then we're really sunk. So I think that's more important than, you know, what exactly we choose to do. We'll choose to, you know, you heard some different things that we're going to do. All of it matters. So thank you for your input, too.
I just have a question, and one of the things listed is, that we could get involved with is the Black Lives Matter movement, and it says come to our meetings to learn more. Where can we find out more about when and where the meetings are?
Oh, Carrie and I have been to some meetings on the Black Lives Matter, and there'll be more information put out on that. Do we have information on that, too? I know we're coordinating.
I was actually going to take the mic and talk about that.
Jim.
I'm glad you asked about that, Betsy, because I was going to say, one thing I was going to say was kind of to follow up with Kim to say that I think this problem can sound so overwhelming that what we do is we just kind of shut down. You know, it's just too much to really take in. And I think what we have to do is work incrementally, and I think we need to constantly be looking at this. And it's uncomfortable, and it's, you know, it's bad. But that's our hope, is that as a community we can continue to address this and deal with the reality of it and take little steps that can make a difference. And in terms of Black Lives Matter, you know, that is a component of economic injustice. You know, we have to address what's going on with Black people in our world and especially in our country. And so there is some really exciting things going on within the UU congregations in the southeastern area. So we have a sign up at our table, and Phil and I have gone to a couple of introductory things, and what we want to find is people in the congregation who'd like to get more involved in that, and then there's quite a bit that is happening that we want to take advantage of. So please come to the table after the service and sign up.
I'm Sarah Hudson, and I just wanted to share with you something that we did when our children were young. We were members of the Presbyterian Church in Waukesha, and for one great hour of sharing always, we thought it would really be wonderful for our kids to have the experience, and for us, to have the experience of eating on a small income, the income that most of the poverty people would be eating on. So we gave them each $1 a day, and we had $1 a day, and we all went to the grocery store together, and they went their way, and we went our way, and we all filled up our cart with whatever we could buy with $7 for the week, basically. and we could not use anything that was in the cupboards at home. Well, it was really an interesting experience. And we did this for several years, and the children really liked it. They certainly felt an identification in what it would be like toward the end of the week, and you didn't have the sweets, or you didn't have enough protein maybe, and you were feeling kind of weak. I remember when they got in high school and they were in sports, it was more difficult, and we, were a little more lenient. But anyway, we suggest that this might be one thing that families would like to do too. And then the money that we saved from not using that money on our food budget, we then put into the church for one great hour of sharing. So that was kind of the time period. Thanks.
Hi, this is Dan. I just wanted to say that the Dr. Browner Soap Company do lots of great things, but one in particular is that they've had a system in place for many years where the top paid employee of the company can only make 5 times more than the bottom paid employee. This is just something that the Browner Corporation chose to do and has done for many years. Great.
And I can tell you, you can buy those products at Target.
Well, that's where these apps are really pretty cool, because they help identify other products and companies that have those kind of policies.
I found it interesting on the screen there where the word think in big letters and right next to the word reality. Hannah Arendt has a really interesting comment in her book on the human condition, and she says that the purpose of this book is to get us to think about what we are doing, and she means action of any kind, just to think before we act. And I think that's something we can all do. Just to get people aware of this and to think about it would be a huge step forward.
Hi, it's Lisa, right here. I saw your emails about some actions that you were planning in Milwaukee. Could you go into a little more detail about that?
Is this the Common Ground?
Yes.
Yeah, that's coming up March 12th, I think, right? The background behind that is Common Ground's an organization that is throughout the state, but they basically interview folks in the community, decide what their priorities are, and then take an action. And in this case, they want the city of Milwaukee to spend $80 million, which is how much they gave the Bucks to help them come to Milwaukee. So take that $80 million and do a number of different infrastructure improvements. One is building a soccer stadium on the south side, indoor. Another, I think, was Center Street revitalization, and I forget the third. But so what we are going to do is actually canvass door-to-door in three different wards where these actions would take place and just build interest and interview people and let them know what's going on and advocate that they vote. So that's more or less it. Carrie, anything else?
And we're going to give them information on how to register, make sure they know where to go to vote, and have underlying themes to give them power to change their community. So there's a lot of dates we can do it. We chose March 12th. If that day doesn't work for people, there's a bunch of other dates. There's information in the social hall about that as well.
Mm-hmm. Thank you all for your opinions and your input and your questions and your kind attention this morning. We invite you to stand as you are able.
Chorus, and the lyrics to the chorus are in the order of service. I'll sing it through a couple of times, and just please join me when you feel ready. Carry freedom in your heart. Carry justice as a goal.
Carry love in every fiber of the fabric of your soul. Carry freedom in your heart. Carry justice as a goal. Carry love in every fiber of the fabric of your soul. Carry freedom in your heart. Carry justice as a goal. Carry love in every fiber of the fabric of your soul. Carry freedom in your heart. Carry justice as a goal. Carry love in every fiber of the fabric of your soul. When your seams are tearing and your sleeves are threadbare and your shoes are wearing from the road, when your spirit's too thin and your heart's too heavy, just remember all that you've been told. Carry freedom in your heart. Carry justice as a goal. Carry love in every fiber of the fabric of your soul. Carry freedom in your heart. Carry justice as a goal. Carry love in every fiber of the fabric of your soul. And the poor are poorer, and when hard work doesn't pay the rent, we need justice for all. Let us work together. Let us give hope to all to live their dreams. Carry freedom in your heart. Carry justice as a goal. Carry love.
As we extinguish this flame, we leave you with these closing words adapted from Alan Paton, author of Cry the Beloved Country. O God, Spirit of love and mystery, open our eyes that we may see the needs of others. Open our ears that we may hear their cries. Open our hearts so that they may not be without succor. Let us not be afraid to defend the weak because of the anger of the strong, nor afraid to defend the poor because of the power of the rich. Show us where love and hope and faith are needed. Open our eyes and our ears that we may, this coming day, be able to do some work of peace and toward justice.